Until her retirement, Renata Klein was a senior lecturer in women's studies at Deakin University in Burwood, Melbourne, Australia. She's the author and co-editor of numerous books on women's health. Renata, can you tell us what is the connection between Big Pharma and pornography?
Yes, I'm very happy to do that. I'm a biologist by training. I'm from Switzerland, but I've spent the last 30 years doing critical work on reproductive and genetic technologies. And the last 18 months I've spent putting together this book called Big Porn Inc., exposing the global harms of the porn industry. It's got 39 contributors. It will be published by Spinif Express in Australia, where I now live, where I was a professor of women's studies for the last 20 years, but I'm retired and I'm supposed not to have so much work, but I work more than ever. So anyway, for the last 18 months I've had my head unfortunately stuck in pornography. This book is, of course, a critique of pornography, and there's some very important long-term critics in it. But I thought, with my background, I have looked at a lot of different drugs, mostly involved in fertility treatment that women go through when they go to the test tube baby programs, but also have looked into HRT, hormone replacement therapy, which, of course, has been exposed finally in 2002 as causing an increased risk of breast cancer and heart problems, and a lot of women stopped taking it then, and now the breast cancer rates have already come down by as much as 8 to 9%, which is fabulous. So anyway, in this chapter in Big Porn Inc., I look at the connections between Big Pharma and the porn industry, and there are many. I mean, the first section looks at the creation of new diseases, because if you want to sell drugs, there has to be a disease there, and so we know that from men who have got erectile dysfunctions, and some men indeed have that, and it's not pleasant, but many more men have this idea that they just want to have sex all the time and they want to have longer erections, and the women really don't, many of the women don't really like them because these erections can be up to, can you imagine it, 4 hours. Some of the women partners don't like it that they're supposed to then be available, you know, for 4 hours and quite frequently. So anyway, that worked quite well. The pill Viagra that we all know about, in Sanskrit it means tiger, was very wonderful for men because men have got this system that if you increase blood flow to their penises, then they have a longer erection. And so that raked the pharmaceutical industry in more than $2 billion. So they thought, well, we'll do the same for women. But first of all, you have to create the disease. So they did some extraordinarily shoddy research where they asked 1,500 US women about their sex life over the past year. And they said, have you had at one time not had an orgasm, not felt happy about the encounter, had pain, or one time not felt like you wanted sex, one time in a year? And so, of course, they got this whopping number of 43% of women who said one to one of these things. So then this figure went around the whole world. Oh, we now have a new disease. It's called female sexual dysfunction. And 43% of all American women suffer from it. Of course, when you have a disease, you have a drug. So the first drug they tried was called, one of the first drugs was called Cialis. It also was called the pink Viagra. But sadly, it doesn't work for women because women don't have this hydraulic model that, you know, if you pump more blood in through somewhere, it doesn't actually lead to more satisfying sex because, you know, old-fashioned women still want to have some intimacy or some relationship or something that arouses them, which is not just this pill. So the pill didn't work. But of course, the pharmaceutical industry doesn't give up that quickly. And so there's this constant, they tried with an antidepressant, they tried with patches. And there's this wonderful woman called Leonore Tiefer, and she's a psychiatrist at New York University. And she very early on challenged this whole view. And she has a website, which is called New Views for Women. She has a group behind her, and they go to FDA hearings, you know, to basically challenge all these pharmaceutical companies who bring up one drug after the other. But sadly, this 43% of all women still is, if you Google it, you know, you still get endless sites saying, yes, female sexual dysfunction. So that's one section in my paper. But then, of course, there's many other connections. Like if you look at the pornography industry and if you watch pornography, you have this picture of the man being these horny hunks who want kind of sex all the time, and they have these huge penises and these huge erections. And to satisfy this man, the woman has to, A, want it as much, you know, and as often, and she has to be like a whore, and therefore she has to have this porn sex ready body. And in order to get this, women just simply, our bodies simply are not good enough. So cosmetic surgery comes in. And then, unfortunately, there's these really sad examples of so-called porn stars. Young women, and I know two examples from German women, who had their breasts augmented to such an extent that each breast, in one case, the woman's name was Lolo Ferrari, and her husband actually pimped her and sold her, you know, as a prostitute, and also made pornographic videos of her. And each of her breasts was 3 kilos. And she couldn't even sleep anymore, so she was on painkillers, on really heavy morphine dose, and she died of an overdose of prescription drugs. And similarly, this year, also in Germany, a 23-year-old woman died during her 6th breast augmentation. I mean, you know, 23-year-old, and the 6th operation to have bigger breasts. There's, of course, many more cosmetic surgeons who make money from this idea that women now have these porn-ready bodies. One example, there's a surgeon in Los Angeles, and he does all sorts of vagina changing laser therapies, because, of course, you know, women, ordinary women's vaginas need to be tightened up. The vaginal lips are maybe of different sizes. Well, you can't have that. They have to be cut so that they all look neat. And of course, the other thing that's happening is that pubic hair these days is just seen as yucko. I found this British TV program from Channel 4. They have quite good critical programs, and there was this woman who went to interview 12-year-old students from a little seaside town in Norfolk, in Sheringham, it's called. And she showed them some video clips, obviously from, you know, pornography videos, where women had pubic hairs, and the whole class went, yuck, pubic hairs, that's all, you know, we need to shave it. Now, 12-year-old girls and boys, and so my point is that the pornography is coming into ordinary idea about bodies and of course, sexuality, which is very, very worrying. And also, unfortunately, the American critic Gail Dines, who has written also this brilliant book called Pornland, she made this comment that 20, 30 years ago, many of us remember there was this movie called The Stepford Wives. The Stepford Wives? Do you remember that? It was this woman, they all looked the same. Sort of like the Betty Friedan of the feminine mystique. They went shopping and they had the high heels and they waited until their husband came home, and then they had, of course, cooked him, you know, the perfect meal, and they, of course, it was clear they were going to have the perfect sex with him, and they were the perfect mother, and they all spoke with the same voice, because it turned out they were robots. Quite a famous film. What Gail says, these days, the Stepford wife wouldn't find any resonance with an audience. What we now have is the Stepford sluts. And that's the message that young women get. In order to be sexually successful young woman, you have to dress and look like a slut. You know, you have to have your I'm a porn star t-shirt. I'm basically, you know, I'm a hoe, which is the abbreviation for whore. And all of that, I think, is very worrying, because the examples I gave before, the drug companies are profiting very much for that, because with all the cosmetic surgery, not only comes procedures, but there comes drugs of all sorts, you know. So we're really going into this whole new, or it's not really new, but it's just more drugs, more medicalization of women's bodies that I'm very critical of anyway. I mean, how come, this is a question I have no answer for, how come that it's 2011 And we are more screened and checked and tested. Every bit of our body is interrogated, and there's something wrong with everybody. For a lot of people, that's very scary. You go, you have a blood test, and then they find a slightly aberration from the so-called average. And of course, the average changes over the years because they find out more things. And so then, you know, many women think, oh no, I'm going to be dead in 2 days. I better do what the doctor says, which unfortunately very often is, oh well, you could take this pill, maybe even just to make sure that you don't really get to the bad bits. Meaning, now, I'm not against all drugs. You know, some drugs are life savings. If I have a headache, I will take a headache pill. So I'm not just totally against drugs. I'm just against this medicalization and drugization of basically the whole culture, because we need to really keep in mind that we're talking about very big industries who are making money from all of this.
Yeah, the porn industry is worth billions. Huh?
Absolutely, the porn industry is probably has already reached 100 billion, and the pharma industry is predicted to reach 1 trillion in 2013, which is 10 times more. You know, 1 trillion is 1,000 billion. So there is a relationship. If you think about it, 100 billion is an incredible lot of money. What could we do with this? No, and the whole thing about this idea of pornography as just a bit of, oh, well, it's just choice and it's a bit of fluff and it spices up relationships. I mean, the horrible things about pornography is that it basically creates this sexuality without any kind of relationship, without any kind of intimacy, with any kind of, I mean, I don't even want to say love, because we know that not every people who have sex love one another. But there at least has to be some curiosity about wanting to explore the other person's body and to have passionate love and feel really very happy in doing that. Unfortunately, these days, and in fact it was even in Sex in the City, which, you know, was watched by millions across the world, that in one scene, two of the people had sex and he said, oh, let's just have a porn video running on the TV whilst we're having sex. I mean, why on earth do you need to see two actors faking it, basically, because that's what it is. Some people say, oh, but the women in porn movies look really happy. Honey, they get paid for looking happy and moaning and saying, oh, how wonderful. A lot of times it hurts them very much, the sex they have to endure. But of course they have to look happy. So, going back to Sex and the City, why would two young people who obviously are interested in each other, find each other exciting, arousing, why do they need this porn video running in the TV whilst they're making love?
And I think stuff about the porn stars, many of them are on drugs and alcohol.
They are indeed, and that is of course another connection. The other thing I'm also saying in my paper is that there are organizations that claim to look after the health of people working in the adult industry. They say to them, look, you should use condoms. But if you talk to people in the porn industry, even they say, condom use, you know, in theory. You know, so they say you have to use condoms, but you can't really. And then they say, but nevertheless, you have to come to a medical center and get tested once every month. Now, which other industry, which other job, in inverted commas, gives you up to 36 sexually transmitted infections? I mean, it's really only in prostitution, where prostituted women have that risk, or in pornography work. They have to be screened for all these sexually transmitted infections once a month. If they get some, well, there's more drugs to take. And we're talking about people who are in this industry a few years. And then put together with what you just said, many take street drugs because they just have to have something to get them through it. And then also what Gail Dines says so well in her book Pornland, mainstream pornography is increasingly becoming extraordinarily violent. It's often more than one man penetrating a woman, and I don't want you radio listeners to have all these dreadful things. They can maybe imagine what they do to this woman, but basically it doesn't just involve the vagina, but other parts as well. And then in the end, the penis goes into the mouth, and then at the very end, you know, this man, or if there's more men, they then ejaculate over a woman's face. In some most horrible videos, she even has to drink it. Now, it is also gross. And so demeaning, I actually think pornography is a violation of people's human rights, because there are, of course, also so men in pornography. And in this book that I was talking about, The Big Porn Inc. that we are publishing, we have a gay man who is very, very critical of gay male pornography. And in fact, he's originally from Canada and had to really leave because he was hounded out by the gay male community because he was saying things that they didn't like. In gay pornography, women obviously don't really figure, but in one particular beastly example, one man was pushing his penis in the chest of the other man and said something like, "Oh, I just love your breasts," whatever there was as breasts, "and you just resemble a filthy whore." So even there, they managed to have this ideology of dominance and submission, even there is kind of feminized as a woman. It's a very sad scenario.
But there are feminists that support pornography and support sadomasochistic sex.
There are, and I have never been able to understand it, because I think my point is, you live in a world which is already so violent. The level of violence against women, domestic, in domestic situations and on the street, is not going down. Why on earth would you want to introduce violence in the most intimate relations that you have with another person or persons? Why would you want to do that? And their argument is that, well, it is all with consent. So we have the most dreadful BDSM sex, which is bondage and masochism and fetish sex. Like one woman is gagged and hooded like Abu Ghraib and is penetrated with bottles and whatever and is almost strangled. But the difference is that at the end she can say the safe word and the others will stop, which is different, of course, from torture where you can't stop. It's bizarre, that's all I can say. And when feminists say, "Oh, but you know, you don't need to go that far, we can have feminist pornography and it's all nice and fluffy." It is not nice and fluffy. In my mind, and I have seen some, there is still this dominance and submission. And it doesn't help me when they say, "Oh yes, but today I'm the slave and you're the dominatrix, and tomorrow I can be the dominatrix and you are the slave." Well, we're striving all, at least I've been striving and still strive for years and years for having a fairer, a juster world with less war, with more peace, with more harmony, with people getting on with helping others, indigenous women, poor women, who have such a hard time, single mothers, homeless children, homeless people. Why? Why would we even think that introducing, even I wouldn't ever call it feminist pornography, but let them call that. Why would we even need something like that? Why that would be good? And quite frankly, I reject it. I think pornography is really something we can do without, in the same way that it's about time to stop men buying women in prostitution. I know that's a very controversial topic too, but one of the great things at this conference, the Women's World Conference, was this huge exhibition on what was called flesh mapping. And there was this whole room full of posters about stopping prostitution and how prostitution is violence against women. And there were all these women from these countries, including survivors who had been prostituted women, talking about the horrendous experiences they had and how they somehow, often with the help of other women, get out and are now trying to make another life. Working in McDonald's doesn't make you a lot of money, and that is the thing that pornography and the prostitution industries have. They promise this lure of dollars. And lots of young women think, "Oh, well, I just do it for a little while. I get myself lots of money for my education or something, and then I quit. Then I do something else." And some do that, and it's all right for them. Others can't do it. They get so into it, and then with the drugs. And of course, as soon as you are needing drugs to do your job, then you're needing more money. And so you're in this cycle that you can't get out.
I'm wondering what the effect of pornography is on the society at large.
I think it's quite devastating, and Gail Dines has data in her book in which she says that in America the average age of boys watching pornography for the first time is 11 years old. An 11-year-old boy wouldn't have a clue what a good sexuality is. He just wouldn't. So he sees these people moaning and groaning and the man dominating the woman and penetrating in the most beastly way. He thinks that's the way it is. the girls who seem to get to see it when they're a bit older, why would they know what a good sexuality is? And the merchandise that they see, I'm a slut, I want to be a porn star, t-shirts, all very sexualized stuff for very young girls, brings them in the same direction. So if these two meet, and they of course meet increasingly earlier to have sex, why would they know that porn sex isn't the way to have sex? And that is really worrying, because if this whole generation of young women, and thanks to the internet, it's not just in Western cultures, if they grow up with the idea that sexuality is equals porn sex, then good grief. And as we were saying earlier, you know, with all the violence that's being introduced, what are they going to do with that? It goes into their brain. It may change them. So we really need a worldwide resistance to it. But that's very good, because the young English feminists have really started to go to porn shops again and to put, you know, the stickers over it, as we did in the 70s and the 80s. This is degrading. This is sexist. This debases women.
And the super gluing of the locks.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. So, I mean, that's actually good. So I actually think we will see resistance, because I think they've gone too far. I think in this totality of wanting to change sex into porn sex, it has reached sort of a critical line where a lot of people say, it's enough, we need to turn the clock. Well, forward, really, but in a new way.
Renata mentions the work of two other women. One is Gail Dines, D-I-N-E-S, who's a feminist anti-pornography activist and the author of three books, including Pornland, which was published in 2010 by Beacon Press.